title of the talk this afternoon is Bless Your Heart. And I'd like for you to be comfortable, but also feel that, especially at certain points, we're giving this talk together. I'll be asking you questions and really wanting to hear from you, not just asking them. So this saying, bless your heart, in the place that I grew up, is pronounced, bless your heart, and is said all the time. My mom still says it all the time. And it's not just for someone who's kind and good that you say, oh, that Ben, bless his heart, he's such a sweetheart. But anyone, including George Bush, bless his heart, who just made another $1 billion off the Iraq war, bless his heart. He can have even extra ones. And also someone who's ordinary, doesn't have to be like the axis of evil or the fairy godmother of kindness. And I really like the fact that for some reason, I'm not sure if anyone knows why, for some reason people just say this, or they used to say this, all the time. Almost any time you mention someone's name, bless his heart, bless your heart. I don't think that we tend so often to say bless my heart so much, but maybe we can start a new trend. And I love to feel into the meaning of the word blessing, which can also maybe reveal more about the word heart, what the word heart means. And it's interesting, first of all, that the word blessing is related to the word wound or wounding. Do you know what wound is, everyone? Where's the no? Like to hurt a wound. If I'm wounded, then I got maybe cut in battle or something like that. One time I was walking in the temple in Bodhgaya. It was my first visit to India and the first couple of weeks staying in that town. And it was around evening time, the sun had gone down, the light was changing. And I had heard people say that at that time of day, when that light is changing that way and things are becoming blue-gray, that we lose depth perception. It's not so easy to tell how far away something is in that light. And I was just jumping across a kind of, it's not a ditch, but like a place that water could run off if it rained a lot. But it was made out of sharp stones. I was jumping across it and I missed, and my knee went straight onto the hard edge from my height, which is luckily not very high. Straight all my weight onto the knee, onto the edge of the rock, and it really hurt. I was wounded. And strangely, luckily, normally, whatever, some guy came out of nowhere and said, oh, I'm a healer. You just hurt your knee. And it was that weird light. You're like, where are you coming from? And he said, he put his hand on my knee and he said, just relax. And I sort of relaxed and he was kind of looking at me like, just relax. And I relaxed a little more. And then finally I realized he really meant relax, that I could actually relax my knee. And it was so painful that there was a lot of tension in my body reacting to the pain. And when I realized he really meant I couldn't relax enough, even because of the pain, I couldn't relax enough. The more I could relax, the more helpful for that pain, for that wound. And so I was relaxing a lot more, and then he could work much better on it. And of course, being in India, just as I was relaxing and he was helping, a monk came up and was really worried about what was going on here on the grounds of the holy temple with a man touching a woman's knee in the now dark. So he didn't really have much concern for my pain. He just wanted us to stop doing what we were doing as soon as possible. So, still, enough help had happened, and the man who came out of nowhere had done enough work on my knee that he kept working a little longer on it. I kept relaxing a little more, and then the monk kept standing there. And then we stopped. So just to wonder kind of out loud what a blessing is, what is a blessing? And if some part of what blessing is has to do with being wounded, what could that mean? And one thing that I love that's starting to happen here on this retreat among us is ideas started to come for this talk, and then people started coming and talking about the things that had come to my mind for the talk. So just yesterday, Jess was reading something about the wound of love, how love hurts because it takes us past who we think we are. It makes us feel that we are bigger than what we thought, that we don't fit into our little cages. And feeling about love making us feel how big we are, we get a feeling of like the unlimited pouring through us in the form of love towards something limited and towards the unlimited in that limited. So we love, we feel a response of love seeing the light and the wind in the tree outside moving in just the way it knows how to move and kind of reflecting green in just the way it knows how to reflect green. And there's love there, and I think there's two kinds of wounding that can happen in that loving, in that letting through of that big love. One is to really let there be intimacy with that specific, limited experience of wind, sun, tree. That intimacy makes us bigger, makes us realize we don't fit in the small cage that we thought we fit into. And also, what moves us about that light, wind, and tree? Something bigger that speaks through the specific also. So it's like double wounding. What a blessing. Not always comfortable. When we think of blessing, bless you. Blessings. It sounds happy and light. And maybe we need to be more aware of what we're saying when we wish for blessings on ourselves or another person. Blessings. Woundings. Woundings that take us past what we think, basically. Wounding that lets us feel our vulnerability to each other and to life itself. So even in being healed, just the opportunity to be healed from anything, even if it's a physical wound or even if it's an emotional difficulty, the opportunity of being healed even a little bit, it's like feeling a bigger energy coming through. It makes us realize that we participate in something much bigger. So just like this man who came out of the dusk and said, just relax, really relax. One thing that we're here together for 35 days to do is to say, really, you can't relax enough. You can't relax too much. you really, really can keep relaxing even if it's painful. Maybe even especially when it's painful. Noticing that the normal thing is not to relax. And it's come to feel so normal not to relax. That we have to keep realizing we can't relax enough. We could keep relaxing more. We could keep relaxing too much. It's taking years and years for us to really trust this process that happens by relaxing. And so we thank you for being part of that learning to trust process, of seeing that that really is what needs to happen. It's not that eventually you'll hear the secret instructions that you shouldn't actually sleep. You should somehow stay awake. Relax, but stay awake. Relax, but not, don't completely relax. Somewhere you've got to be tense. It's not that we're going to tell you in a few years. You were just relaxing? If we start to really feel what we think of as strength, if we really feel when we are using our strength, physically or on any other level, what is happening? I think that what we find happening is tension. And if we can be honest enough to feel that tension that we call strength, I think we find that it's also a hollow tension. Hollow means it doesn't have anything inside. It doesn't have anything to give. It's not deeply connected to an energy source. And by really experiencing that over and over again, that what we think of as strength is this hollow tension that doesn't give anything, then maybe we can start to get de-addicted. Slowly, slowly. I'd love to know what you think or understand about the word merit. This is another word that was coming to mind, and then it's been coming up in conversations, and even we got a very sweet, very nice note and present from someone talking about merit and wishing to share that with everyone. So I'm just curious what you either understand or experience, what you've heard, even if it's not your experience, about merit, and also if you've experienced what you think merit is. Does everyone know what this word is, merit? Not really? Okay. So let's hear. Anyone? Just a basic idea of what merit is. Just first to define it for someone who doesn't know English well.
I connected this reward, but I'm not sure.
Okay, so maybe it's Aneta is asking, because she says she doesn't know exactly what merit is it connected with reward?
It's like doing a tick.
Mm-hmm. Can you say that a little more loudly?
It's like doing a tick.
For doing anything?
Apparently for doing good
things. Okay. So one definition of merit is that we get a kind of good boy, good girl on our chart.
somewhere
for doing something, and usually it would be doing something considered to be good. So in that definition, it is somehow related to reward. Anyone else? Yes?
For me, it's like I do something out of intention, or just because I like it. And out of that comes a natural chain of nice, beautiful things, which are like flowering out of that.
Okay. So you said you do something out of intention? Or
from the heart, because I want something.
Right. So what's the intention? How would you describe that from the heart intention?
Mm-hmm.
So the intention is to express love, or to stay connected with love, or Can you give an example?
Maybe during the talk.
Okay.
I remember something.
Okay. Could everyone hear what Nicole G was saying? Not so much? That for her it's not so much an intention to do good, but she, out of love, feels like doing something, not looking for a result. And later on she sees that many different benefits flowered out of that. And for her, that's... So is the merit... What's the merit? The flowering? Could you hear better? Okay. Anyone else?
You put points on the heavenly account.
And also a bad point. It is due to the election.
Okay. I think merit limits it to the good part. But saying that there's a good effect means there could be a...
Okay.
So could everyone hear what Petraji said?
No.
Do you want to say it again?
Like some good points on the heavenly account.
And then Anandiji is saying that in French, the word that they use for merit is not only about good points, but it could be good points and also bad points. And as soon as we anyway talk about the possibility of getting good points on the heavenly chart account, then there's it implied the possibility of losing, at least losing the good points, if not getting bad points. So what happens if I have good points in my account in heaven? What does that give me? What can I, how can I spend that? Okay. Anyone? A good next life. How do we know?
I don't know, that's the way I know the word merit.
Okay. 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 So part of the idea is later in the next life, good life.
Maybe not adding this idea of good and bad, like just acting how we feel.
Acting how we feel, and then?
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
Just flowing with it.
Yeah. For you, this is feels like merit.
More or less.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Yeah.
Yeah. In Patricia, there's any merit.
Yeah.
All things have to do with doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you see all the older people who are 78 and still walking around gaining their merit, whether it's special limit or not, but it seems to always be coordinated with this doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Could everyone hear? In the Tibetan tradition, there's a lot of emphasis on the importance of gathering merit, gaining merit, and that it's usually coordinated with doing. So especially the older generations are involved in actions that will, they understand, will give them more merit. So doing pilgrimage or mantra.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it doesn't mean that just the merit is good enough? Okay, that's what it means? Okay.
Just merit is its own reward.
Okay. Could you hear? Just merit is its own reward. That can be related to like giving is receiving. This kind of idea. Yes.
Burma is a tradition that when you do a good action, you have to share the merits with everybody.
Mm.
It means that you have to remind that it's not your action.
Mm.
Whatever you do, all the universe is doing good with you.
Mm.
So you will have effects for this, and all the universe will have your effect.
Mm. Beautiful. Could everyone hear? Yeah? Okay. So that's related to what I was talking about, the wound, the blessing our heart. That it's somehow not just me loving something limited, but something much bigger, moving through towards something much bigger. Universe, doing good for the universe. Sometimes the idea of sharing the merit gets distorted into the idea that if I share the merit, I'll get even more merit. So it's really beautiful the way Sibylji described. I like it. Yes.
Would you say again how the Tibetans, like how they see merit, how they describe merit?
What Kellyji said? She's saying that there's an emphasis, first of all, that we need to gain merit, we need to build a pile of merit, kind of, and that usually in practice happens by doing something, mm-hmm. by doing a pilgrimage, by doing 1,000 or 100,000 or what, 10 million mantras or whatever. That it's usually understood as we have to do something to gain the merit. So it's also interesting I wouldn't say that's what the Tibetan tradition says about merit, but it does seem to be like the general overall understanding and movement. I guess within the Tibetan tradition there must be hundreds of very subtle understandings about it. But generally we do see a lot of. And there's one really great story where the Dalai Lama is looking at slides of these beautiful photographs taken by a famous American photographer that were going to be made into a beautiful sort of big, expensive color photo book about the Dalai Lama and Tibetan Buddhism. And towards the end, there's one photo of this very picturesque older Tibetan woman looking very devoted, praying, maybe doing her mantra or something, and maybe in the background is the Potala Palace, the Dalai Lama's palace, like stunning, beautiful. And the Dalai Lama is commenting as they look at each photo, and when he sees this photo, he said, "She's probably asking for a bicycle."
Thank you.
like the air touching it and just such extreme sensitivity to heat and cold. And you're talking about from that place of extreme sensitivity, that can be the place where compassion can arise from. And then he was talking about something called a layer consciousness, which is a place of non-differentiation between self and other, and coming through the womb from that place, so without separating self and other.
Nice. Could everyone hear? Not so much? Do you want to try again?
I was reading Trungpa Rinpoche, and he's talking very much about this open wound place, and saying that the sensitivity that can come from there can come from a place of non-differentiation between self and other, and losing one's territory. He's talking about that as well. Not maintaining that sense of I and other.
Okay. Could you hear? Okay. So I'm glad that Agastya brought up the idea of compassion, because it's another thing I wanted to ask about. And it's also lovely how what Agastya is saying is tying into what we're doing here with resting. And this relaxing and resting and even losing the sense of here I am meditating or applying attention to my breath. We even lose the me meditating. We lose me putting attention on that object. And then we fall asleep or we don't know what happens. We go somewhere, which usually often would be this alaya place, where there's not this differentiation of self and others dissolved. And it's not that that's still not quite deep meditation, but it's where we can hang out to, Ajay would say, sprout towards deep meditation. It's the little that we can do, which is nothing, just relaxing. But it does emphasize again this space of something bigger happening in or through me. And the need to spend time in that dissolved place, even though it's not the end of the story. Even though it's not like the kind of good points in the heavenly account. It's not doing anything special. It's not even meditation. It's much deeper than what we have called meditation in the past, but it's not even that much of a little tick or reward on our heavenly account as meditation. So, what is compassion?
Wish that it wasn't like that in that moment, that my perception of suffering, but the wish for it to be other than that, for it to be better.
Okay.
What is quivering?
Could everyone hear Bodhiji? Quivering? Okay. Anything else that could be called compassion?
Compassion is that they care, that the full water of our inner flower is mm-hmm. And they let that this water is spreading out of the other flower of the other person.
Nice. Okay. Anything else that could be called compassion? I think that because it's hard to talk about, I think that that's really what Bodhiji meant when she was saying we wish it could be somehow different or better. It's more that we feel that that hurts, for example, or we feel. And it's this vulnerability, sensitivity that Agastya-ji was talking about as well. And I think it's quite interesting to have the possibility of just the feeling. And as Eliza G is saying, open to the humanness and open also to the not me, not you-ness of just feeling.
There's something else that you say that maybe actually it's having at some point the honesty of sitting in the tension of that impulse of wanting it otherwise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would even strip it more bare and say it doesn't even have to be just right, but it is. So there might be the tension of wanting to fix or change something and feeling the pain of that as well, and just feeling what is. And letting that just feeling be so bare, so sensitive, that we don't know whose pain, whom it belongs to, but there is feeling of it. And there's a kind of magic point of intimacy that can happen. So I'm curious about accumulating merit. So when people talk about merit, there's usually the need to accumulate it, have a lot of it, and also to share it. And usually it's understood that by being compassionate, we're getting more merit. But we can also really play with this in our experience. If what we're talking about as deep, this deep compassion, where it's not me doing something for you, which would tend to be me looking down on you, poor thing, suffering. Bless your heart. But just feeling. Whether there's a difference between accumulating and sharing. And also to play with when we talk about accumulating and sharing, but especially accumulating. Does everyone know this word, accumulating? Like making a pile. One of my teachers, Papaji, used to say, when, especially if I happen to follow my intuition and do something kind of courageous, then he would say, ah, mountain of merit at your back. Meaning like, having a mountain of merit behind you allowed your flow to lead this way, allowed you to do that courageous thing. But he would always say, mountain of merit at your back. So if we have to accumulate a certain size of a mountain of merit before we can really flow, really be involved in our process, to what extent is there some kind of quantity needed? How much is it that we need a quantity of merit, a quantity of doing something? Do I need to, how many meditation retreats do I need to do? How many meditation hours do I need to do? This kind of question. But I want to apply it specifically to what we're doing here, not just sort of those people who think they have to meditate hard for 20 hours a day or whatever. But we're really encouraging resting. And in a way, I'm saying, like, we actually do have to rest enough. We have to rest a certain amount before we can know why we were resting, before we can really experience why we are resting. So I'm not saying, like, I know what merit is and this is merit and you have to be like this, but I find it interesting that in a way, we're making an experiment without knowing the result. And sometimes we pretend that that's not the case, as if, yeah, we all know resting is good. But actually, only by resting enough can we really feel what happens next. And so maybe one kind of mountain of merit that's worth having at your back is a mountain of resting. Maybe. A mountain of not doing. Yes?
I struggled with this Tibetan idea of merit. To me, it sounded like what we used to have, collecting trading stamps, green stamps. If you get enough green stamps, then you get a toaster. So I dealt with this idea, this question, what is merit, for a long time. And to me, what you just said, what Papaji said, when you step out of your normal way of doing things and did something completely different, it's something that changed you. It changed your mind.
Yeah.
And so for me, merit is something that really changes me at a deep level.
Yeah. Can you give an example?
Well, the example that you mentioned.
Yeah.
When you do something that takes courage, when you do something with an open heart, when you do something, you step out into the unknown.
Yeah. And what is it that we can do that gives us that? And what is that giving us to step out into the unknown? What is needed for us to step out into the unknown?
An open-heartedness. Sometimes it takes courage.
Yeah. And so what gives us courage and open heart? What really makes that change possible? Even if that change is not like a permanent change, but sometimes accessible, that we have open heart courage.
Sometimes it's just seeing things in a new way, a new perspective, just seeing things in a fresh and completely different way of seeing, understanding.
Good. And what allows us to see in a different way? You can tell me to shut up anytime you want.
This opening, I guess. Just this opening.
Yeah. So it's kind of almost like a kind of self-nourishing circle or cycle. Opening helps seeing in a different way, helps opening, helps seeing in a different way. And somehow, well, I'm curious how the courage fits in.
Well,
courage to open, courage to see in a different way.
Oh, to let go of all that you hold dear.
Yeah. So what gives the courage to let go of everything that we hold dear? Exactly what gives that courage? Desperation, Ken?
Desperation
is what I heard. So sometimes out of desperation we fall, and either we're so desperate that we just fall, so tired that we just fall, or tired, desperate, and also trusting a little bit so that we just fall. I don't know. For desperation? Some people have found that to be the case, yes. When we realize we have no other option, that helps a lot. So what gives courage? Or what's another word for courage, Claudia G? What has given you courage to let go of everything that you hold dear? And to see things in a different way.
Yeah, what comes to mind is joy, but I think that comes after.
So what comes before the joy and ends up being joy? Please.
I don't know, maybe it's the click that Gemma talked about. Mm-hmm.
I think it would be useful to feel what could be other words for courage, also.
Like a shift in something, something moves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good. Yes?
Maybe it's a storage of experience from the lens.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Could everyone hear? That maybe this click happens because of the merit. So maybe there's not a direct cause making the shift happen. And so maybe it's not just linear. But I still would love to know from Claudia G. Eventually, maybe not today, maybe today. What else is involved? We've got a lot of the pieces, but I think there's one missing piece in our description. So there's some kind of factor of quantity, like doing enough of something that we could call meritorious, something that brings good effects, or like Nicole G was saying, by doing that out of love, that we're surprised by how much flowers from there, not only towards myself, but in many directions. And also what happens to kind of move us beyond our usual ways, so that's called courage, or seeing in a different way. What is it that takes us off of our railway tracks and helps us find a different way of moving suddenly? Even if 1 minute later we're back on the tracks again. So in this, we can call process of giving ourselves enough of what's needed so that these clicks can happen, we click off of the track into another way of living. There's a couple of ways that we tend to stop ourselves. We put the brakes on. And one way, especially with this resting and resting enough, and this possibility that we can't rest too much or relax too much, we can't have too big of a mountain at our back. Many times we'll keep track of how much we're resting, and we'll feel, I'm resting so much, I've never rested so much in my life. How can I rest so much? I'm getting more tired by resting more. Maybe there's something wrong with me, etc. Which is all part of the normal process and really scary sometimes. It's also funny and it's also terrifying sometimes. What if I really am just wasting my life, and in 3 years Jaya is going to tell me, like, you are only resting? You didn't just do that little bit of effort that you could have done 3 years ago. So we really notice, wow, how much we're resting, because it's different from what we're usually doing. But sometimes we don't notice how much we're not resting. So we count how much we're resting, but we don't notice that all of the not resting that we're doing is counteracting the resting. And that can be in big ways, that maybe we've come to this retreat with a list of things that we're going to do on the 35-day retreat. It sounded so long before we got here that we knew we could take care of all of these little problems in our lives and get in shape and, you know, paint our masterpiece and catch up on our diary and whatever, do 3 hours of yoga every day. And maybe there's not room for everything. And maybe what there is room for is resting enough. So there's also the little ways that we don't rest, that we don't count, that we don't see how this subtle not resting is taking away from our mountain of merit. Did you want to say something? What thing?
Like one is wanting to make a change out of how we usually live, and out of then knowing inside that there is another way possible, and then seeing in the situation what is needed to make this change. So the recognizing of the thing.
Okay. I think, in my experience, that's part of the click. And so I'm curious of a few things, but one is a little more about what allows the click. So part of the click is recognizing that I could do this differently. And this is how. Which is magnificent when that happens. And other times we try to convince ourselves that we could do it differently, but it's not happening. We're not really seeing. So the question, just to review again, that I'm still interested in is, what is it that gives us the courage, the possibility of seeing things in a different way? So including seeing that I could do a different thing here. That the way I've usually done this has always led to suffering. And it could be different. I could actually not say that thing. Or I could actually not beat up on myself or whatever. And a second half of the question is, what allows us to let go of everything we hold dear?
I kept just training myself to really relax.
And I ended up having like good night's sleep, no one came, and
yeah.
It was just like a big why not, like why stay at home?
Yeah.
Even if you're going to die, it's better to be relaxed and kind of
tense. Yeah. Good. Can everyone hear that? Yeah. No? A little. Okay. Can you repeat a little louder over there?
Yeah. The feeling is just like, why not? Like, and I use the example of like being somewhere a bit isolated and being scared that someone might come and kill me or rape me or something like this, and feeling myself tense up, then kind of going, like, why not just relax? And then relaxing and it not happening and.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
For me, it's love of life. While I have this thing that I think of as my life, or being alive, not wanting it to be kind of wasted in misery.
Mm-hmm.
And so the willingness to try something new, even if that new thing is not formed yet, but just to, you were talking about the railroad tracks, like putting at least one foot out into, something other than that habitual way.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the admitting, the admission of how miserable that habit is.
So this is part of also what Nicole G was saying, that something that can happen that might be part of merit or because of merit is that we can really feel what hurts. We can feel that the limiting of ourselves is miserable. And that allows healing to come. That's this blessing. Yes? Yes?
So it's trust.
Trust?
That's what you're looking for.
It seems to me that trust is pretty hard to come by. And so I guess a lot of what I would look for is what allows trust. What makes trust possible? Yeah. Which, yeah. Yes.
I know. And then hope the other end might catch over if it's going to work.
Yeah.
Or
the why not. Like,
yeah.
So both, and both together are good. Why not? Even if I'm going to die, it's better than being miserable when I could die anyway. Like, by tensing up in my little shack, I'm not protecting myself from being raped. So what if I relax anyway? And maybe from there, I can have a sense of, tonight I need to go somewhere else, for example.
Yeah.
That's just me. So there's why not, and there's trust. And both of those don't mean that we're just like throwing ourselves away.
To me, there's also like curiosity, kind of like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make another move because the disaster could be really interesting.
Good.
So it's kind of like you said, from the point of being relaxed, then I could actually get up and fight.
Yeah.
So it's not just like surrendering, kill things or do this, but like just with common sense, it's better to be relaxed than anything as well.
Yeah.
Is there something?
Sorry, Annette, did you?
No, it just felt like it's coming from a really deep sense of saying yes.
Yeah. Okay. And I think the curiosity and the saying yes and the trust are one thing. Maybe different levels of one thing. Yes?
For me, there's something about space that... things that are being described are ideas or impulses that are perhaps new.
So one kind of way that we stop ourselves, even while we feel that we're really going into our process wholeheartedly, one way is that we're resting, but we're also not resting. And we count how many hours of resting and how that seems impossible to rest so much, but we don't notice how impossible it is to live without rest. There's this line from a Hafiz poem that says something like, please rest, because this separation from God or from seeing what is the hardest work that you could do. So another way that I see us putting the brakes on, keeping us in our tracks, can be related to the conversation about compassion and sharing merit. The impulse to share merit, whether that's coming from a real honest place or coming from a habit. It's important to feel the difference. To feel how sometimes we might give up everything that's dear to us, as Claudia G was saying, or we might just give up a little bit, but really feel the cost, really keeping track of that, and somewhere demanding some kind of result. All right, I've been resting for 5 days now. Where's my experience? And, yes? No. One particular way that we demand, that especially tends to stop us, I find, is that we demand to understand what's happening. So I'm giving myself as fully as I can, even if it's not 100% fully, I'm doing my best, giving myself to this meditation or this process or this resting or whatever. But I need to understand what's happening. And if we could kind of back up and see, like, where did we make that deal? Who did we sign a paper with, like, God or something? You give yourself wholeheartedly as best as you can, and I'll give you understanding whenever you ask for it. And so it's really hard, really, really hard. But if we can see that we never managed to get someone to sign that paper. So we have no rights. We're refugees, kind of. We're in between. So it's, as Agastya G was saying, Trungpa Rinpoche often talks about giving up our territory. So even if we had a passport, we gave up the territory, so it's not a valid passport anymore. And no one sort of is going to listen to us and our demands. And the important thing to try to notice and feel in ourselves, that sometimes it is helpful to hear something that makes sense about what's happening to us. But mostly that helps us because it allows us to give ourselves more fully. Only because we think we understand what's happening. Even if someone tells us a wrong idea and we say, oh, okay. And then now I understand, so I can give myself fully. We're still in that kind of mode of going with our invalid passport. And that's not giving ourselves fully, unfortunately. For most of us, it seems to be the case that we're going to understand much later, much after we experience. And so it can happen that we're experiencing really deep things and we have no idea that that's happening. And in a way, for most of us, this is a really good thing. Because if we had the idea of what was going on, we would get so involved in how wonderful that was, or if someone else is getting better than me, how much longer do I have to go? How far have I come? And it's just stealing energy from our life. So a third way that we put the brakes on is sometimes we have a kind of breath glimpse of how good it is. Just how good it is. And this has been coming up, I think. Maybe it's just been privately, so I just say now. It seems to be coming up in the group. The sense that that's too good to be me, to be in my experience, to be what life is about if I'm living the life. And so we close it down. This is again this blessing of the heart, where something bigger is flowing through us. And we can't take it. And truly, we can't take it. We can't take it, we can't do anything with it. But we can let it come in and through. This is probably merit and sharing merit. That's probably what that means. I was even starting to feel that maybe what merit is, is when we can really feel or experience, even for a half a second, just the goodness of walking or the sound of the bell or the taste of the rice, these small things that we consider unimportant. So the things that we consider unimportant, that we put in the category of unimportant, really hold a key for each one of us. Each one of us considers different things to be unimportant. And whatever those things are really important for us. It tells a lot about us. It tells a lot to us in many ways. So one small example is just to notice, now we can look back at the first few days here and see how did we react to the first few days here. What was our overall reaction? And not to put ourselves into boxes, but just to get a sense of whether it was mostly aversion. Mostly, one person was saying today, the first few days, she was in her room. The room was so hot, it was going to be impossible. The whole retreat impossible. But already now she's found another way. That the heat is not only tied to the sensation of unbearable, but brings her into real intimacy with the coolness of the air in the morning. So, or if the reaction to the first few days was, this is great, I'm going to get so much out of this, I want to stay here forever. Why didn't we come here before? I want to invite my whole family. Ah. Or for other people, maybe the overall reaction was more like, what? Where's the dining room? What's happening now? There's a meditation? Ah, we have roommate, okay. Okay. Or as one of our good friends is famous for saying, couldn't be bothered. Can't be bothered. I don't have any reaction. So in that case, nothing is important, which means really everything is important. Really everything is communicating something. So within those reactions, let's say I hated it here when I first came. I hated the teachers, I hated the building, I hated the weather, I hated the food, I hated myself, I hated my bed, I hated the Western toilet in the bathroom. There are so many ways that that connection of hatred to those different objects can help us learn a lot. And so there's the simple way of just reversing, like, I hate that person because they eat too fast or too slow or whatever. And so really turning this around and bringing this home, if I think the person eats too fast and this is wrong, then probably there's some way, at some point, it might take us a few years to realize that we eat too fast, literally. Literally, and also less literally, symbolically. There's also just the ways that whatever I focus on in that manner can allow me to come, not only to come back to my own business, which is my reaction to the object, and also to feel what was getting touched. So where's that compassion, that wound place? Not like, oh, I should be compassionate to that person. They're eating too fast. Let me wish them, may you eat slowly, you poor unenlightened person. Not this so-called compassion, which is just hatred playing tricks. But that, like Augusta G was saying, where it's just so sensitive and I realize, oh my God, I'm that sensitive that even the way someone else is eating is completely getting inside my skin and driving me crazy. That's how sensitive I am. That's how much sensitivity is possible. Let's not even make it a problem. How do I live with that much sensitivity? And what can happen by getting behind my sensitivity? And not letting that reach out and take things out of context and make kind of a big deal out of those things. Those things that we think are important that aren't. And let that sensitivity come towards and be with the things that we think are unimportant. With that much intensity, if possible, as what we allow to happen regularly in the hatred department. That much intensity of sensitivity, of meeting, of rawness, of feeling with what we consider unimportant. So I'd just like to end with one story. One time I was watering the plants outside my house a long time ago, and I was hurrying because I wanted to finish and get back inside. And just maybe a few months before, an old friend had died suddenly in Burma, actually in Nepal. And some of you know him or heard of Thomas Jost, who was managing the Bodh Gaya retreats for many years. So he got really sick and misdiagnosed and then died. And I was watering the plants and hurrying, and I just felt Thomas there, even though he had died. Maybe because he had died. And it was something as if he said to me, "This is life." And I really stopped and felt, you know, I actually love plants, which is why I have too many of them. Which is why I'm out here in the heat, in the night, watering them. And I'm trying to hurry and finish watering the plants to get to my life. So it's like just this really simple story of how we could be wounded by the plants, wounded by the necessity to give water to the plants, wounded by my love for the plants, as a blessing. Not like me being compassionate to the poor plants who will die. They will die if I don't water them. And not only because something in me will die if I let the plants die. But that's kind of a clue about how deep, how deeply blessed we are in the ordinary. So there's this Rumi poem, and he talks about this, and this is it. Just watering the plants or walking up the stairs. And he said, even the stars that are running across the sky at night are jealous of this, the richness of this. Are there any questions or anything someone wants to say?
Could you just review the three breakpoints?
Okay.
Yeah.
There's probably more.
Sure.
One was, especially with resting, but with anything that's nourishing us, that we really keep track of the mountain of resting that we're doing. But at the same time, we're exhausting ourselves and not noticing that that has an effect on the resting, that takes away the benefit of the resting directly. And then the demand, like, I gave up everything, or I'm giving up one extra hour for resting, therefore, give me something, especially understanding. And the third was the too good. What I glimpse of experience when I let it be, and let it be in context as it is too good. There's too much merit in just being. And then we turn away from that immeasurable merit and go to the counting kind.
By resting, you mean physically?
Physically is a good start. And then that starts to show what else is tense, and how it even also starts to show how that what is tense could sometimes relax, and then more often relax. And then something more subtle is tense that we become aware of. Let that also be seen, felt, slowly relaxed. Continually more and more subtle. So yes, physical, not only physical. So sometimes it's coming on the way towards going deeper, and we need to find either a way of, like, going under the radar, kind of going under the commotion, let it happen, but staying underneath until it passes. Or sometimes let the restlessness, what does it really want? What movement is needed? And experiment with letting that happen and see if that allows the deepening to happen. Other times, just it's because we've gotten given too much energy to non-resting. It's a momentum that needs to die down. And I find Jinshin really helps for that, for me. Other times, it might be that it's It feels restless. And it might be that new openings are happening, more energy is coming through. And we need to really soften into that to let it be contained and absorbed. Our usual way is when there's more energy, we want to get rid of it. And sometimes it does need to be, something needs to be just catharted, like released. And other times it's letting it really in. So sometimes the restlessness is showing that there's a place that got hard and is not absorbing. And we can feel what will help that absorb in myself. So, yes.
Can you say again the different ways of being wounded?
The different ways of being wounded. I don't remember what I said about that.
Okay, so can you just say something more about being wounded by the trend of the past?
I'm not sure it would be good to talk about that right now. Maybe we can continue that next time. Try to feel what that could mean. Knowing that I talked about blessing as woundedness, sensitivity in no self and other space, and see what you come up with. So may we really feel what real strength is and let go of hollow strength. Feel what really strengthens us. Feel how what strengthens us is not only for us. And feel how strength can come through weakness. How real strength can come through real deep relaxation and real deep sense of helplessness. May our gathering be a momentum of awakening in all directions.